Hi there, you're listening to the Rick Rockhill podcast, and today's topic is all about diabetes, primarily type 1 diabetes, of which I am a patient, if you will. I have the condition of type 1 diabetes, and I want to talk about it. And this podcast is for anybody who has recently been diagnosed, anybody who's sort of, I hate to use the word struggling, but sort of dealing with managing your diabetes, and or anybody, if you have a family member or friend who has diabetes and you want to have some insights as to just what it's all about and so forth. And I would start by saying that I was misdiagnosed originally as a type 2 diabetic, and it was just one of those things. I went in for a standard physical and blood work and all that normal stuff. I'm a healthy guy generally. And my doctor said, by the way, did you know you're a diabetic? And you could have knocked me over with a feather. I'm not overweight. Maybe I was 5 or 10 pounds, a little heavy, but you would never have thought I was an overweight person by looking at me, and I didn't fit the mold. And I was in shock. So my doctor at the time put me on metformin and asked me to just, you know, be more careful with what I eat. And quite honestly, didn't really spend a lot of time, and just said, hey, look, you know, lots of people have it. It was that kind of conversation. He was very nice, but honestly, it was just more of a, you know, did you know? And I thought, okay, I guess now I know. So time went on, and quite honestly, I wasn't really paying much attention to it. I was just a little bit careful, but not a lot. I didn't really spend any time. No one encouraged me to read up or to understand what I was eating and so forth. So I just went about my day. And then I had an interesting situation happen a couple years back, whereby I was losing weight. And quite honestly, I forgot about my diabetes. I just forgot, didn't think about it. And I was losing weight, and I didn't really notice some things that were going on with me. And so I just didn't really pay attention. But what happened to me was a situation that was life-changing, and I was ignoring the symptoms. I didn't realize what was going on, and it just sort of sneaked up on me, if you want to think of it that way. So let me start off by telling you that diabetes is a pretty big deal. There's, I don't know, 420 million people or so worldwide who have diabetes, and type 2 diabetes is the majority. That's like 90-95% of the cases of diabetes are type 2. And that's like almost 10% of the whole adult population. And it's about equal between men and women and so forth, but it's on the rise. Type 1 diabetes is genetic, whereas type 2, I believe, is more typically lifestyle related, diet and exercise and so forth. But it's a big deal. It's on the rise, and it's a definite, there are absolute health risks, long-term health risks associated with diabetes. And I think the message I would have for anybody, you know, this podcast, I want to be mostly for people who are dealing with diabetes. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time repeating things you already know. But for those few people who might be a friend of a relative, a friend of somebody with diabetes, and you don't know a lot, I think I'll just say this, that the biggest risk of diabetes is that you don't notice the damage that's happening to you until it's too late. And so if you don't get ahead of it and manage it when you're in the early stages or whatever, whenever you're diagnosed, you got to jump on it right away, because the damage you do to yourself by not managing your diabetes, you don't notice it. It's all happening at the cellular level inside your body and to your organs and things. And so by the time it becomes a problem, then it really is too late. So I think that's the damage. In my opinion, the biggest danger is that people sort of just like, well, it's fine. I had that piece of cake. I had the ice cream. I had pizza. I had this. I had that. And it didn't seem to bother me. So that's the thing. Now, over time, diabetes can lead to really bad stuff. You can lose your eyesight, kidney failure, nerve damage. And that's, you know, the most typical thing you hear about diabetics who lose a foot and lose toes and things. And because of all that happens, it could cause strokes, heart disease, other blood vessel issues, macrovascular disease, and so forth. So it's a really big deal. It's one of the top 10 leading causes of death, certainly in the United States. And it doesn't help that people don't know a lot about it, despite all the time it's been around. So I think that those are the physical things that happen to diabetics. But there's also other things that happen to you, and it's there's an effect on your mental state and stress and other things. It's sort of this chicken and the egg. It all kind of starts happening to you when you realize what's going on. But diabetes, for sure, it's a chronic condition, and it basically is when you have really high levels of sugar in your body, and that your pancreas, which is a vital organ, produce enough insulin naturally to lower blood sugar. So what normally happens, a healthy person who does not, a non-diabetic person, when you eat a meal, your pancreas kicks in, it recognizes there's a rise in blood sugar, the pancreas then produces natural insulin, and it reduces the blood sugar in your body, and everything's fine. When you're diabetic, you have an issue where your pancreas either produces very little, or in the case of a type 1 diabetic, produces virtually no insulin. And the danger is that the blood sugar levels stay high in the body, and you get these crystallization that happens. And it as I said, it causes problems throughout the body and in your eyesight and all the different things you can imagine, where if you had little crystals of sugar, so to speak, building up in your body, it would cause major problems. So we all know it's a serious situation, and if you've not yet dealt with this, the symptoms of being a type 1 or type 2 diabetic is you're peeing a lot, so there's a lot of that. You're excessively thirsty. You don't even realize it. You're just drinking tons and tons of water. You lose weight. That's one of the things that triggered me, I noticed. But yet you're hungry all the time, and then you're tired. And then maybe you have dry skin. That's another thing that happens as a result of all this. You cut yourself and it takes forever to heal, a very slow healing wound. Women especially can get yeast infections, men can too. And then over time, things like tingling or numbness in your feet or your toes, your extremities. So it's a pretty, it can be problematic. And then of course you can get other infections and all kinds of things. So what happened to me? Well, I was ignoring my diagnosis as, at the time, a type 2 diabetic. I didn't think about it, as I mentioned earlier. And I, because I had gotten so skinny, I'd lost so much weight, I didn't know why. I was on a cruise with some family members, and we sort of all said, hey, on that cruise ship for those 2 weeks. And it was a great time. I had a great time. Except I was doing unbelievable damage to my body and didn't realize it. And I was having all the classic symptoms during the cruise. I was exhausted. I was having leg cramps. I was drinking tons of water, peeing all the time. Anyway, I was a textbook case, didn't know it. Came home from my cruise and my doctor, I had a physical scheduled, and my doctor basically got my blood labs and said, you're going to the hospital right now. And I had to go in and get some fluids and other things, but the net result was my doctor said, okay, you have to go on insulin right away and now for the rest of your life. And I was devastated. I went from being a guy who said, oh, I've got something called diabetes and I take this white pill every day and I'm fine, to all of a sudden realizing, wow, I now have a life-changing situation. And I was affected by that diagnosis. I was, or I should say that the how I had to care for myself now. And it wasn't because I did something stupid on that cruise ship, although that didn't help it. That just brought it to light. I ate too much food as a result of my condition. It was my ignorance that caused that. But the condition was still there regardless. Anyway, fast forward, what happened to me was, fortunately, I had someone in my life who insisted that I needed to find an expert. And my mom's a doctor, and she said, you really need to get an expert opinion on your diabetes, and you need to find an endocrinologist. So I asked my doctor for a referral. I could tell you that my primary care physician, he did give me a referral. I think he was a little insulted, was my sense, or he felt like, why do you need that? I'm taking care of you. So it was, I share that because that resistance from my general care doctor was kind of shocking to me. I think everybody should have an expert and help them understand. And if I didn't need anything after that first consultation, I would have stopped. But I went to see an endocrinologist, and she right away looked at my data. She looked at my finger stick blood checks and my patterns and different things. And she instantly saw something that my general care doctor did not. And she asked me, she said, "Have you been tested to see if you're a type 1 diabetic?" And I had no idea. And she came back and said, "Your patterns and what's happening with your blood and what I'm reading from your charts don't look typical of a type 2 diabetic." And she said, "I'm going to run a blood test, a specialized one, and look for this GAD antibody. And if you test positive for that GAD antibody, you are type 1 diabetic." And I said, "Okay." And I don't know anybody in my family who has diabetes other than me. But the test came back positive, and turns out I'm a type 1 diabetic. And that changed how I was being treated, because my endocrinologist realized immediately that my pancreas was not creating any insulin, and I needed a different course of treatment, a different type of treatment. And so she immediately changed what was happening. That was the best thing I ever did in my life, was with respect to my diabetes anyway, going to see an endocrinologist. So that's tip number one for any of you who are dealing with this is, sure, talk to your general care doctor, that's fine, but insist for a referral to an endocrinologist and find out if you're doing everything you should. So that's step one. And I wanted to lead off the show with that, because if you only listen to this much of the podcast and that's all you take away, I hope that's the one thing that you do, because then your endocrinologist can help you in the right direction. So I'd like to pause for a minute here, and for any of you who are not believers yet, I want to play this quick PSA for you about diabetes.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org, but you're probably not going to. Nope, I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work, I get it, you're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
And there you have it. There's what everybody should do if you think you might have diabetes. So if you do have diabetes, in particular type 1, then you know what a struggle it can be. It's tough. It is manageable. That's the good news. But it requires all of us to have exceptional discipline. You have to be monitoring your blood glucose levels all the time. And you have to plan. It's a constant planning everywhere you go. You have to take things with you, and you have to plan ahead, and you have to think about all of your meals and how do you keep yourself healthy. Staying healthy as a type 1 diabetic is a full-time job in and of itself. The most important thing is to check your blood. And you need to have those blood glucose, you know, that you could finger sticks and so forth, a little meter. I personally use that. And then last year, I started using a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor. Made a huge difference in my life. And I'm going to talk about that shortly. But the most important thing then is to understand your glucose levels. When you know what your blood sugar levels are, then you can do something about it. If it's too high, then you know what to do. If it's too low, then you know what you need to do. And the second thing, other than knowing your glucose or your blood sugar, is to know the patterns, right? So it's not just what is it right now, but what happens 2 hours after I eat? What happens 3 hours after I've eaten? How about different types of food? If I have, let's say I have something with a lot of fats in it, cheese and so forth, my body may digest that differently than if I just were to have a more lean meal, say a piece of salmon and some green vegetables. So that will have a different reaction in your body. And knowing how your body digests food and does things is an important step in understanding your glucose levels. So that's awareness. I'll just call that awareness. But the other thing that's really critical is understanding food, and your relationship with food is what's so critical, because knowing what you eat and how it makes you feel and the cravings you have is so important, because pretty much everything we eat will get converted to energy, to carbohydrates. And you need to know that, because the sugar that converts, you know, there's different types of a conversion. So obviously certain things, like if you were to have literally a candy bar or dessert, and there's a lot of sugar in that, you're going to have a very quick response. It'll break down fast and you'll get a spike in your blood sugar. If you're eating something that might be, say, more complex, more fiber in it, or, you know, say protein, those will still convert to energy, but over a longer period of time, over a couple hours. So, you know, we're not going to have time in this podcast to talk about food. That's another whole subject in and of itself. But knowing the point is, it's critical to start understanding and really knowing about food, because we all need food to live, okay? And your body, your brain needs energy to survive. Your body needs energy to function. So when we eat food, it's not just because we're hungry, it's because your body needs that energy. It's like putting gas in a car. Now, the type of food you eat makes all the difference when you're a diabetic. And it requires you to do your homework and learn, so that you are then better capable of managing your diabetes. And I learned a really good lesson from my endocrinologist. She told me that as part of my training. Now, mind you, everyone is different. I should just say this, that all of us have our unique situation. Okay, there are different forms of diabetes. There's different health conditions. You could have other health complications which then affect this. So what I'm going to talk about is my experience, and it may not be exactly applicable to you, but the message I wanted to share is my endocrinologist said, okay, you know, based on my lifestyle, my health condition, where I am with my blood sugar, it's relatively well managed. Her comment was, you need to make changes in your life that are sustainable, that you can continue to do for a month, 2 months, 2 years, 10 years, and so forth. Because I'm only in my early 50s and I've got to live a long time healthy. And so if I do something drastic, I can't be so extreme that I can't continue that lifestyle. And what she meant was, again, applicable to me, that it's not likely, it's not practical to say, I'm never going to eat anything that's bad for me. Because we will, either because you'll have a craving or because you're somewhere sometime when you don't have a whole lot of food options that are very healthy. Brain thinks about and reacts to that and satisfies those urges is what's critical. And my doctor told me that, you know, provided your blood sugar is reasonably in check and you're doing a good job with it, occasionally you can have something sweet. You can have dessert. But whenever dessert comes or you serve yourself, you need to think about cutting it in quarters and say, I'm going to only have a quarter of it. And so I'll do that. If I'm at a restaurant and my blood sugar's been good and I've been, you know, a good boy, if I plan for it with my meal, I will have dessert if I'm with somebody, I'll say, hey, let me just take a third of that piece of cheesecake or a few bites of that chocolate cake or whatever it may be. Or if it's ice cream, I'll have just a small scoop. And it requires you to have discipline. So you need to say to yourself, I'm going to order dessert and I'm only going to have two or three bites and I'm going to leave the rest. That is discipline. Now, that's good because you still get to satisfy those cravings you have. And if you're not somebody who has a sweet tooth, then you're even better off than me. But I have one, so I had to learn about what I would need to do so I wouldn't go bananas. But honestly, it's much more than just your sweets. It has to do with the meals that you choose to eat, because food is the most critical thing that affects your diabetes, right? So, for example, what you choose to have for breakfast when you start your day. Your goal, you should try to have protein at every meal of some kind. And one of the challenges that we have, and certainly in the United States, is so many of our breakfast options are very sweet and sugary, you know, from cereal to waffles and all kinds of things like that. It's just all bad stuff. So try to think about foods like eggs. And if you're going to have toast, make sure it's 100% whole wheat toast, because complex carbs are better than simple carb. So don't eat white bread, eat whole wheat bread. Don't have any kind of sugary cereal. If you want to have oatmeal, you have to think about portion control, because even though oatmeal is good for you, and it's not, you know, it's not a simple carb, it's a complex carb, if you have too much, it's still going to spike your blood sugar. So portion control is critical. But anyway, again, as I said, this podcast is not intended to talk all about food, because that's a huge topic. But knowing your food and knowing what you eat is what's so important. And so, yes, there are times when you're going to have to decide if you really, really want to have, let's say, a hamburger. You need to say, can I eat it without the bun? Can I choose to do something that maybe is something different? Maybe it's just a chicken breast or something like that. And so you have to decide your meals, even with dinner. So I will tell you right now, when you're a diabetic, you pretty much have to, for the most part, stop eating things like French fries and pasta and white bread and, you know, all that kind of stuff that, you know, pizza that you love. You just have to say, I'm not going to think about those. There are alternatives to those types of foods. But if you are going to have them, you just need to have like literally a couple French fries and that's it. You don't eat the whole thing of French fries anymore. But anyhow, I digress. My point is, this knowing your relationship with food is what's critical. And if you talk to somebody in healthcare, there are classes to teach you about counting carbs. And it's critical. You have to know, when you're an insulin-dependent diabetic, you have to know what you're consuming and what that translates into the number of carbs, because that's what tells you how much insulin to give yourself. So that's the most important thing. So as I told you, first, you know, you need to know your blood sugar levels, know how you react. And then step two is you need to know your food and how to count carbs. Those are the two most important things in managing your diabetes. So what about me? Back to my experience. Well, when I was first diagnosed, I read a bunch of things and I talked to my doctor, and I didn't really believe that a lot of the things I was told were going to happen to me. I was told that, you know, you might be more stressed. You might feel slight depression about it. You could have effects with your sleep cycles and all that. And all those things happened to me. I didn't realize it, but I would get irritable, cranky, stressed, because you're constantly worrying about it. And those are things that can affect you. So, you know, believe what you read and look in terms of what people say about the effect of diabetes. Believe that and allow yourself time to deal with it. I found for me, talking to people was helpful. Having someone to share these experiences with and say, here's what I'm going through, it made it a little bit easier. I had to be, you know, thinking that I know not everybody wants to hear about this constantly. So I found a few different people who are willing to listen. But I would say to you that I was struggling, and I was really, really fortunate, because I had a friend of mine who is a pharmacist, and he's kind of a more than just a regular pharmacist. I'm not sure exactly, but he has experience managing diabetes and other things like that for patients. And so I lucked out, quite honestly. I had a friend who helped me understand the process of using insulin. And at the time, when I'd first been put on insulin, I was using two types of insulin. I was injecting myself four or five times a day with a combination of either short-acting or long-acting insulin. So before I'd have breakfast, I'd have to count my carbs, what am I going to eat, decide how much insulin to give myself, inject myself, and then eat my meal, and then check my blood in 2 hours. And then maybe like lunchtime, I would give myself a long-acting dose of insulin, which would carry me through the whole afternoon, and then that kind of thing. So I was dealing with the constant injections and all that stuff. And I was lucky, because I had a person who was very knowledgeable about little things, how to properly inject myself, the angle at which you should be putting it in, how to be pinching your skin to find the right spot, and so forth. Even just, you know, cleaning the insulin vial and so forth. Those are things that, you know, only if you're lucky to talk to somebody who can help you. But my point is, network. If you don't have a friend in the medical profession or a nurse or somebody who can tell you some tips, read as much as you can, because that will help you. But my experience was my endocrinologist. I was going to see her regularly. I was getting my blood checked every 90 days, and she would look at my glucose levels and my average, my A1C. And I was doing okay, not great, but okay. I definitely got it under control. But in my instance, I was really struggling, because I was crashing all the time. And you know, there's two types of things that can happen with your, when you're diabetic. You can be hyperglycemic or hypoglycemic. And one of the crazy things about this is if you have really high blood sugar, you know, obviously I mentioned already, you get this damage to your organs and so forth. But if your blood sugar is too low, wow, that's even more dangerous in the sense because you can have a literal reaction or impact on your body that's immediate. So high blood sugar can have problems over time and cause problems to organs, but really chronic low blood sugar, you can pass out, you can have a stroke, all kinds of things like that. It's super dangerous. And that's what was happening to me. I was having a lot of crashes, and I knew that because I would check my blood sugar when I'd be low in the middle of the night and all these different things. And my doctor, she would look at I would take my meter in, my blood glucose meter, and she would look at all the times that I tested my blood. And she was really concerned by the number of lows I had. My blood sugar would go too low. And for me, my body, my insulin sensitivity, I was having a tough time with the long-acting insulin. It wasn't working well for me. And my endocrinologist kept saying, hey, I think you should go on an insulin pump. And I really resisted that. I was informed and I was concerned about what that looked like. And I had a misinformation about what an insulin pump was. And so I said, no. And so she was just like, what's your problem? But eventually I just kept saying I resisted the insulin pump concept. I thought it was some kind of surgical implant in me, and I kept saying it was going to be this, I was attached to this device for the rest of my life. It was going to be like, you know, metal tubing or something. I didn't know what it was. I was stupid and I didn't want to do it. But again, my friend who was helping me get through this, and my mom too, being a doctor, she just said, you know, really should look for the insulin pump a little bit more because I think you'll find that it'll change your life. So I finally decided, all right, I'm going to go talk to my endocrinologist again. And she said, you're a great candidate for an insulin pump. You're doing a decent job managing your diabetes, your blood sugar, but you need a little bit of help. And in my case, she felt like the long-acting insulin was not good for me. It was not working. But an insulin pump would work better because it just gives you teeny tiny micro doses of insulin throughout the day as you need it. And it's this consistent level of insulin. And then when you have a meal, you give yourself insulin for that meal, but it's through your pump. You don't have to actually inject yourself. So that was a really good thing. And the second part of that was when you have an insulin pump, you get a glucose that body. And instead of doing finger sticks periodically myself manually, when you prick your finger and then you get the strip and you put it in the meter and it checks the blood and all that, you attach this thing to your body and it essentially automatically checks the blood sugar every 5 minutes and it sends a signal to to Bluetooth, and it lets the insulin pump know what your blood sugar level is. And the cool thing is you don't even feel it. So a nice thing is I don't have to worry about checking my blood sugar myself, but I also don't have all these little finger prick marks on all my fingers and it hurts and all that stuff. So that was kind of nice to give that up, to be quite honest. So I did that. I started last April of 2019, and my healthcare provider insurance company gave me two options. So I know there are other insulin pumps and CGMs on the market, but the ones that I had available through my insurance were either two brands. They were Medtronic and Tandem. And I decided for my personal preference that I liked the Tandem X2 Slim insulin pump. And it's cool because it can be updated with software. So it connects to the internet and you can download software. In fact, there was just a huge software update just this past January of 2020. And I'll talk about that in a bit. But my point is, it made a huge difference for me. And I'm very, very excited about the results I've had with my Tandem X2 Slim insulin pump and my Dexcom G6 CGM. We're going to take a break and I'll tell you more about it. But I will just preface to say that this podcast is just This is not a sponsored topic. This is just me talking about my opinions, and no one has asked me to do this or paid me or reimbursed me in any way. I'm just sharing, hoping that this will be useful to you if you are thinking about how to better manage your diabetes. So we'll be back right after this break.
I rescue around 75 to 100 dogs a year. A lot of these dogs that come to me are very malnourished, extremely stressed, and they're overall just not healthy. A friend of mine reached out to me who's been in the pet industry for well over 30 years, and he told me he was developing a new dog food dedicated to gut health. I'm in an industry where seeing is believing, and as a rescuer, I make sure the first step in the process is these dogs get as healthy as they could possibly be. Now all my dogs eat Lucy pet food.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Champ, reminding you that when you adopt a shelter pet, you discover all the things that make them unique. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
And we're back. You're listening to the Rick Rockhill podcast. Today's topic is about diabetes and living healthy, staying healthy as a diabetic. I mentioned before the break that I am a type 1 diabetic and recently started using an insulin pump and a continuous glucose monitor. And I can honestly say it changed my life. So if you are currently struggling with diabetes or managing your diabetes, and I would urge you to look into this. As I said, talk to an endocrinologist and through your healthcare provider, see if you can get an insulin pump if you're a good candidate for that. They are expensive. So I actually chose to upgrade my health insurance plan before I went on to the insulin pump, and I got a lot, like 90% of the cost was covered because it's expensive. But you know, it was a huge, I did some planning is my point, and it was well worth it. But anyway, so as I mentioned that I'm on this Tandem X2 Slim pump, and it's actually pretty cool. One of the things that I like about it is that it's easy to use, and it's small. It's a relatively small device, a couple of inches. And look, it's true that when you have an insulin pump, you are going to wear this thing 24 hours a day. That's the reality. And it's discreet. That's the good news. I mean, I remember when I would be out, I travel a lot for work, airport, on planes, sometimes long haul flights, or at a restaurant. Before, I had to use myself, go to the men's room, take my insulin. First of all, drag all my insulin and all my needles and all my alcohol swabs. I had to drag all that stuff around with me everywhere I went, not to mention my meters to check my blood. And it was a big deal, it was a big production. And I got a restaurant, I had to go to the men's room and, you know, the stall and take the shirt off. And it was a whole struggle about giving yourself insulin. And then you'd have to hope that the kitchen wasn't running long, because if I gave myself my injection and I had to, you know, the timing, you can only take it so soon before. So it was a lot of stress, a lot of work. And when I went to the insulin pump, one of the coolest things was you just – this thing out of your pocket, press a couple buttons, and you put it back in your pocket, and you're done. You don't have to leave the table at the restaurant. You don't have to leave the seat of your airplane. You know, if you're at work, it's easy. So just alone was a huge win. You're not dragging the stuff on. And also, you're not injecting yourself, you know, five times a day in different spots, and, you know, you do sort of bruise your skin. So essentially what happens is you have this insulin pump, and you – when you first set it up, it's programmed based on your body needs, you know, so you've got your provider essentially with you. So they look at what you're typically been doing and how much insulin you've been taking a day. And they set up all these programs on there for different times of the day. And the insulin pump is set up so that it automatically gives you a baseline or a basal rate of insulin. So to keep you at a relatively, for people like me who are type 1, who have no insulin being produced by my pancreas, that I need a baseline of insulin to get dosed at very small levels throughout the day. So the pump does that automatically. It's just, it's set, so the program is in there, okay? And I fill the pump with insulin every 3 days, get 3 days worth injected into this little cartridge. And then I, there's a little infusion set. It's a little plastic tube. So when I haven't put anything on me, nothing on my body, and there's nothing permanent, okay? But when the time comes, I have to put my insulin pump in to start up a new one. I just alcohol swab. I clean that little area on my skin. Then there's a little application device where you basically snap it, and it goes very small little insert needle, pushes this plastic cannula, and it sticks, you know, onto your skin. So you have like, it's a little tiny, maybe an inch and a half round, maybe not even that big, plastic device that will be the insertion point for the tube. And you just stick it on there. It's not permanent. It's just, you know, moves around every couple of days. But my point is, you put that on, and then you just attach this tube. It's very, very thin tube that comes from the insulin pump, and it just goes right on there, and then you're set. I mean, there's obviously a setup process, but every 3 days you do this process. So I always have it on me, but I move it around every 3 days, and you put fresh insulin into your pump, and you do that. So the process is very cool. So then once it's on, it's attached to me, then it's, and I turn it on to resume insulin. It's working. It's doing its thing. Okay. Then when a meal time comes, you still have to count your carbs. So I know that if I'm having, let's say, a peanut butter sandwich, I know that that whole wheat bread is 10 carbs per slice. And I know that if I put maybe 2 tablespoons of peanut butter or whatever, and there's no sugar in the peanut butter, that's probably going to be about 26 or 27 carbs for me. And I can program that on my pump to say, okay, I'm having 26 carbs, and maybe 80% of it will digest right away, and maybe 20% or something like that will be over 2 hours, whatever I'm eating. So I can enter my carbs, and I can spread it out if I need to with the pump. I just program it. So like, for example, I had eggs this morning for breakfast. So I know if I had those eggs are going to convert at a certain level and to carbs, to sugar. And I was able to say that's going to be over 2 hours. So I told the pump, I'm eating this food. So much of the breakfast is going to be digested in a couple hours. So I don't need all the insulin now. I need a little bit now. And the pump does that automatically. So it's pretty cool. Then what happens is my CGM, the continuous glucose monitor, that is on your body, and you move that every 10 days, and it basically just alerts you when it's 24 hours before it has to be replaced, and you just move it around to another place in your body. But that thing stays on. You can shower with it. You know, you can go swimming with it, whatever you need to, it stays on, and that sends the signal automatically. Now, I happen to like the Tandem device because it's easy to program, and it does have the, you know, updates to software and so forth. But what I also like about it is it connects via Bluetooth to my phone. So I have an iPhone, and there's an app you download. And the cool thing is that I can either look at my glucose level on the actual pump, because the insulin pump has a display, and it can say your current glucose level is, you know, 130, and I can look at it. Or I can look at my cell phone. So my iPhone has the app. I open up the app, and it tells me what's happening. Now, the cool thing is this is what I like about Tandem. They have this predictive technology. Because the glucose monitor is checking your blood every 5 minutes, you don't even know it. You don't feel it. It just happens automatically. So it's getting a lot of data. So every 5 minutes it's checking, and it knows if it's flat, if it's stable, or if it's going up or going down. So when it transmits to your phone via Bluetooth, you actually have this various sets of arrows that it will tell you if your blood sugar is on the rise, if it's going up really fast or if it's going up slowly. It'll tell you if it's stable by, you know, a horizontal arrow, or if it's declining, it'll certainly either go down at an angle or go straight down. And if it's two arrows down, you know it's declining really rapidly and you may need to do something. So the cool thing about the CGM and the insulin pump is if, let's say, and here's a great example. Sometimes, you know, I've learned that I need to eat my dinners at 6:30 every night for the most part. And if I had lunch at, you know, 12:30, and now it's getting close to dinner time and I haven't yet started cooking and my blood sugar starts dropping, maybe I didn't have a snack or something, and I think, oh, my CGM alerts me if I'm going down in my blood sugar. And before I get to a dangerous level, it alerts me and I can then react quickly. So, and of course, it even has urgent settings. Like if you're getting below 70 and it's going down rapidly, it'll tell you in 20 minutes you're going to be at 50. And like that's a really bad level to be at. So the cool thing is the CGM, what does it do? Other than just checking my blood manually and saving that, it's actually being predictive and telling me in advance. Same thing with the rise, right? If I miscounted my carbs, if I didn't count correctly, or I'm at a restaurant and I don't know exactly what was in that, and I didn't give myself enough insulin through my pump, it'll tell me you're going way up. And so that's a cool thing, is it takes away the guesswork. And if you can do that, you're well on your way to managing your diabetes in a better way. And of course, right now on this podcast, I'm only talking about this relationship of food and insulin, right? I'm not even getting into the lifestyle of needing to exercise and sleep and all those other things. That's, again, another whole topic. But for this podcast, really the message I wanted to share is if you haven't looked into getting an insulin pump or a CGM, I would really urge you to do so. It made an enormous difference in my life. I mentioned earlier that my endocrinologist, before I had my pump, she was really concerned because I was crashing a lot. And she told me something that stayed with me. She said, you know, in your case or my case, my blood sugar was relatively well managed. I was probably at the 160 level. My, you know, A1C was whatever, 7.1. Not bad. Not great, but not bad. And she said, you know, you're not doing any real damage to your body right now. But she said, all it takes is one bad crash to kill you. And that stayed with me. She said, you could have a really bad crash. You dip into the 40s or the 30s. She said, you could have a stroke. You could not wake up. You could crash while you're driving, literally, and then crash your car. I mean, she just said, you know, it just takes one bad one. And that was all it took for me. That really was the tipping point for me when I decided, yep, I'm in. So I can tell you that since I have been on my insulin pump and the CGM portion, I have not had one crash. I've gone down a couple times and because, you know, I didn't eat or whatever, but because I was able to be alerted before it went too low, I would just take a glucose tab, you know, a little chew tab, or I go and have a, you know, piece of candy or something. I'd be able to have something to get myself out of that decline. And the point is, knowledge is power. So when you know what's going on with your body and your glucose, you can react. That's the point. So I would just tell you that the combination of the insulin pump and the CGM changed my life and has helped me better manage my glucose levels. And to be honest, my A1C came way down and I did a much better job. Now, I can tell you that it's not all roses. You know, there are some things that are, you know, it is an adjustment. There's no question about it. And you also have to continue to learn, and it's not like a one and done. So there are times when I still go high, and there are times when I, you know, I maybe cheat a little bit with my food and I have to, you know, think about it, but at least I can fix it. You know, Thanksgiving and Christmas were tough because I definitely was still eating a lot of foods and so forth, but you still need to be disciplined. Portion control is the number one problem that diabetics have. I mean, lots of Americans are overweight anyway because of portion control, but diabetics in particular, it just puts way too much tax, you know, pressure, so to speak, on your organs, and your body is flooded with glucose, and you need to prevent that. So even if you're taking insulin, even if you're doing these things, if you eat portions that are too big, it's very hard for your body to get caught up. And the last thing you want to do is just take tons of insulin and just to allow yourself to eat a lot. Those times when you cheat or you treat yourself, those should be the exception. You know, if it's your birthday and you want to have a piece of birthday cake, make that exception of when you would do something like that, not the rule. And you would use those instances to correct your glucose level. But the insulin pump is great because of all those reasons. Now, some practical things, just like, you know, when you're going to go shower, you can suspend it, turn it off, and you just, just take it off your insulin insertion point, and you can put a little cap on there, and you can go take a shower or go swimming or go to the gym or whatever you want to do. So you can disconnect it, you know, for short term. At nighttime when you sleep, you know what? I just wear pajamas with a pocket, and I put my insulin pump in the pocket. It's attached to me all night long, and I sleep. I don't even notice it. It does its job through the night, and I don't crash. I don't go too high. So that's all pretty cool. The new software update that Tandem had in January was approved by the FDA after lots of testing, and it's a closed-loop control IQ technology, and everyone's super excited about it, including myself. The reason is because this new technology, or this algorithms, essentially, it's a program. So the insulin pump, you still have to bolus, meaning you still have to give yourself insulin through the pump before a meal. You still count your carbs, no question about it. So you would say, okay, I'm going to have 35 carbs for dinner, and I'm going to spread them out over this much time, and you do that. But let's say maybe you either miscounted, or maybe, as I said, you're at a restaurant and, you know, who knows what they put in there when they were cooking, and your blood goes a little higher, blood sugar, then your insulin was corrected to do so. What happens is, with this new software that I downloaded to my pump, it's automatically, you know, has the new software now. If that instance happens and I took the insulin through the pump and it doesn't completely cover it, the pump will look at the trends in the glucose, and it's going to see that I'm going up, 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 up. And it predicts, okay, it looks like this guy's blood sugar is going to be up at this level in 20 minutes. And then the pump will automatically give extra insulin to cover that, to prevent it from going too high. So the really cool thing is that you still have to count your carbs, and you still have to do that. But if you make a mistake, or if it doesn't cover it, your pump will keep you level and not allow you to go too high. Conversely, if you start declining and maybe you obviously if you took way too much insulin, you're going to have to eat more food to offset a really, you know, severe dose if you did something really stupid. But if you're on the decline, maybe you didn't eat as much as you thought you were going to eat, or maybe it wasn't as carb rich as you thought, and then the pump realizes, hey, he's going to be declining, aside from the fact that it would alert you if you really were going down, the algorithm will turn the pump off and say, okay, he's going down at a steady decline. Don't give any more insulin and allow the body to stabilize. So that was a really nice improvement to the insulin technology through Tandem Diabetes. And I'm super excited about it. It's been working well for me. And, you know, it's all still relatively new. But it all does require you as an individual to be informed. You need to be knowledgeable. You need to take an active part in managing your diabetes. And I found that it's really surprising when I talk to other diabetics how little information, how much, you know, people really don't read a lot about it. They don't take the time to read labels. And honestly, people are misinformed. I don't say this from a position of on a high horse. I mean it from a standpoint of, in our country, people just haven't really learned the basics about nutrition. And I see people who, they're like, I don't understand it. Why I can't manage my blood sugar. And I said, well, what did you have for dinner? And they'll tell me, well, I had French fries and I had a hamburger and I did this and I had that. And I'm thinking, okay, well, all of that was bad. What did you have for lunch? Well, I had pizza and then for breakfast I had, you know, some cereal with bananas. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, people think just because I had, bananas that must be healthy, right? It's fruit. Well, bananas are very high in sugar. You have to read up about that. You can have blueberries or blackberries or strawberries, right? But even those, you have to eat things in moderation. You got to count what they're worth. The biggest thing I did, my advice I can offer you, is to get a scale. I went to Bed Bath & Beyond and bought a food scale. know if it was $10 or $15, but that thing is terrific. And it taught me about portion control. As a general rule of thumb, the palm of your hand, just not the fingers, but the actual palm, that's about the size of a say the protein you might eat for dinner. So let's say you were having a chicken breast. A chicken breast about the size of your palm of your hand is usually, say, 6 ounces. That's the size you should be eating. If you're a meat eater and you go to a restaurant and they have a 24-ounce steak, you need to walk away. You need to get the 6-ounce piece of meat because it is not good. And even though you're right, that piece of meat is not sugar in and of itself, it's those 24 ounces of meat will start converting and it's going to cause a problem for your blood sugar. So honestly, it's not just about the sweets. It's about everything you eat. Vegetables, you need to think. Like peas, for example, they're a vegetable, right? But they're also very starchy. So if you eat a lot of peas, you actually could cause a blood sugar spike because it's just too much. You have to read the label or read up online about what green peas are, and you have to eat a small portion. Green beans, however, you could eat a fair amount of green beans. Steamed broccoli, you can eat a lot of broccoli, right? And it's not going to have that negative impact like the same amount of, say, green peas would. So it all comes back to knowing your food. So I think that the most important thing you can do is read about it. The great thing is the trainers, the people who help you get your insulin pump, usually they'll come to your home and train you how to use it. They observe you and see if you can do it. They can also teach you a little bit about food, enough to help you count your carbs as you're using your pump. So I wanted to tell you more about that in just a moment, but we're going to take a very quick break and hear a few messages.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. That means it could be you, your best man, your worst man. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org to know where you stand. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
I rescue around 75 to 100 dogs a year. A lot of these dogs that come to me are very malnourished, they're extremely stressed, and they're overall just not healthy. A friend of mine reached out to me who's been in the pet industry for well over 30 years, and he told me he was developing a new dog food dedicated to gut health. I'm in an industry where seeing is believing, and as a rescuer, I make sure the first step in the process is these dogs get as healthy as they could possibly be. Now all my dogs eat Lucy pet food.
Back. You're listening to the Rick Rockhill podcast. Today's topic is diabetes, type 1 diabetes, and staying healthy with that. And before the break, I was talking about food, and I said we're not going to really delve into food. But again, under the general umbrella of tips to help you better manage your diabetes, getting an insulin pump or having a CGM is a big step. But if you don't know how to count your carbs, it's going to be tough. So there's tons of resources. Your trainer can do that. If you have that through your, when you get a pump, they can help you a little bit. But there's resources online like diabetes.org, which is the American Diabetes Association. There's countless websites out there. And it's a whole lot easier these days than it used to be before the availability of information. But understanding the types of carbohydrates you have starches, you have sugar, and you have fiber. And in starches, there are complex carbohydrates that are like beans, for example, dried beans, very starchy vegetables or whole grains. So those are complex. And things that are kind of sugary, like fruit, like an orange, for example, pineapple, those are, bananas. There's a lot of sugar in those, or even in a cookie. But fiber comes from plant sources, fiber does not come from animal things like eggs or meat or fish, but fiber is typically a plant. But counting carbs is important because you can find out information on a lot of websites or even on labels and so forth about whether, something, just understanding the type of carb that it is. But if you're going to, the best thing you can do for your health, is to buy fresh food. It's expensive, but if you can eat fresh food, that's the best thing you could do. I personally, one of my things is I try to eat a lot of fiber for a lot of different reasons. But fiber is helpful because if you eat a lot of vegetables and whole grains and plain nuts, not salted, but like those are good things for you. You can also use some lentils, dried beans like garbanzo beans or, you know, different kinds of beans like that. Just be careful they don't have a lot of salt in them and be sure they're clean. But fibers are good because they really help not only cleanse your digestive tract, but they also help absorb and reduce blood sugar. They help lower your blood sugar and reduce your risk of heart disease. So good fiber, like, you know, beans, as I said, low sodium beans, black beans, kidney beans, chickpeas. I eat garbanzo beans. Those are good. Cannelloni beans. You can buy them in cans, just rinse them out so they're not so salty. Or fruits and vegetables like celery. Those are good. Broccoli, I mentioned that. Any kind of berries. If you're going to eat bread, if you're going to eat any kinds of things like that, you're really much better to go for whole grain everything. Be careful because sometimes what they call wheat bread is not whole wheat bread, and then you're getting a lot of sugar from that. And almost always, those whole wheat pastas, you still need to take a very small portion. You'd be shocked how little you can actually eat. So you need to, you know, really take all into account. But counting carbs is an important part of this, and maybe some other episode of this podcast I'll talk about counting carbs. But you know, if you do look at, start by labels. You can, you know, there's some apps, by the way. I downloaded an app called Glucose Buddy, and that's super helpful. You can look up different foods, and it'll tell you what they typically are. Some restaurants actually have their data in there. But I think, you know, what I do is I started by educating myself at the grocery store. And I look at the nutrition facts. And so if you look at a label and you first look at the total carbohydrates, and then it'll tell you if there's fiber in there, and then you actually have to deduct the fiber. So if something says, if you eat, say, 2 ounces of this item, it's going to be 20 carbs. But 3 of those are fiber. So then you'd say, okay, my carb actually is 17 carbs. So it's not hard, but you have to sort of do the quick math. But I have learned that there's certain foods I can eat, and I know how my body reacts to them. And I typically, you know, eat a pretty consistent diet for those reasons. And all of these things, your discipline, your behavior, helps you stay healthy. So I guess my message to you would be, is if you're dealing with diabetes, and whether you're new to it or you're still struggling, number one, find someone to talk to who can be like a sympathetic ear. Surround yourself with people who eat healthy and don't abuse themselves and have a good relationship with food. You need to have those people around you for support. You need to recognize that it's a struggle and it's an ongoing battle, and you have to, don't let yourself get depressed. Get exercise. And if you're really not one to do a lot of exercise, at least walk. Get out and physically move. But if you have the ability, talk to your healthcare provider, get to an endocrinologist. Talk to them about getting a CGM and getting an insulin pump. You will find a huge difference in your ability to stay healthy. I am delighted when I look at the results. And by the way, there's some really cool apps when you use these things. There's apps that monitor all your data. And with an insulin pump, of course, you need to have your average glucose level or your A1C still needs to be evaluated. But what's really important when you have an insulin pump is the percentage of time that you're in range. And what that means is your doctor will tell you this is the level you want to be at. And you have a couple times when you're high and a couple times when you're low. But if you're, let's say, 75, 80% of the time in range, meaning in the proper levels, you're on your way to a healthy life. So I hope that whets your appetite today. It is possible to have healthy living as a type 1 diabetic. And I'm a huge fan of the Tandem Diabetes X2 insulin pump and a huge fan of the Dexcom G6 CGM. Again, it's just my opinion. I would encourage you to do your research. I would encourage you to talk to an endocrinologist and help yourself to start your life and be healthy. Happy eating, and I wish you all well. Thanks so much for listening.